We'll move now to item 28, Glideways presentation, and I will turn it over. Luis, are you getting us started or?
Well, just a quick introduction. And the commission did ask that we request Glideways to make a presentation on their solution for transportation that they're working on in partnership with the city of San Jose and also Contra Costa, and I think even some other locations. So representatives from Glideways are here to make that presentation for you, and to ask any questions that you would like.
Great, thank you. Welcome.
Great, thank you, Luis. Thank you, Kristen. I've met some of the board members before, but for anybody I haven't met, my name is Dustin Earle. I'm VP of Business Development at Glideways. Prior to Glideways, I was at Lyft for about 7 years and started a number of different teams there. I'm an attorney. Going way back, I actually went to UCSC and lived in Santa Cruz for a number of years. So I'm very familiar with the area and excited to talk with you guys today. Paul?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Paul Jampgard. I'm an architect, an urban designer. Don't have the same experience that Dustin has had in Santa Cruz. Years ago, I worked on some of the early concepts for the redevelopment of Pacific Station. It's very nice to see that underway and transforming that part of downtown. And also, even in a life before that, worked on some of the concepts for the master planning at UC Santa Cruz. My experience, my role at the company is the director of system design and infrastructure planning. And the experience I bring to that in this new kind of technology is a lot of years of experience up in the Portland area. I'm developing alignments for the MAX light rail system. So I bring a lot of that sort of real world transit experience to this new technology. We're very excited to share with you today. So thank you very much.
Great. And we've got a brief presentation. I'm going to give a high level Glideways overview. We're going to talk about some of our project wins, one just over the hill in San Jose, another one in the East Bay, and then a third in San Bernardino County. And then Paul's going to bring it hyper-local back to Santa Cruz. And we're going to talk about how, if you put in the commuter rail, how we can be a last mile solution to local points of interest like Dominican Hospital, Cabrillo College, UCSC, Watsonville Airport. And potentially if the commuter rail doesn't go in place at certain times, we may be able to service that area going from Watsonville to Santa Cruz while still keeping the rail for freight, keeping the trail for people, and meeting capacity concerns as well as providing a phenomenal user experience. So I don't know that the clicker is going. It was working before. Let's see. All right, we'll just do the old fashioned one. Next slide. Thanks. So I always like to start off with what Glideways is from a high level because it's really simple. It's origin to destination without any stops on a dedicated fixed guideway. So the vehicles never interact with pedestrians. They never interact with other cars. This is not an open road solution. It's not like Waymo. It's not like Cruise. It's on a dedicated guideway. Next slide. So when we were first coming up with Glideways back in 2016, we wanted to start with the rider experience. So we want to provide an extraordinary rider experience. And so we talked to people. We said, hey, what would it take for you to actually get out of your car and take transit? If you take transit, what would make that experience better for you? And hands down, 100% of people said predictable, fast transit times. They didn't want a trip to take 10 minutes one day, 20 minutes another day, 30 minutes another day because they got a train got stuck in a tunnel, they missed the bus, their car got stuck in traffic, whatever the reason. And so that's what we provide. We provide direct origin to destination without any stops in between on a dedicated fixed guideway. So you have predictable transit times. Our vehicles travel at 30 miles per hour. So that's 2 minutes a mile. So if you're going 5 miles, the trip's going to take 10 minutes every single time, not 9 minutes, not 11 minutes, 10 minutes every single time. The next thing that people wanted was it to be comfortable and spacious. So our vehicles are 1 to 6 passengers. If you have a larger group, you can platoon multiple vehicles. The rides can be shared or they could be personal rides. Even if they're shared rides, it's still origin to destination without any stops. We batch people together that are going to the same destination. And then there's tons of space for luggage, sporting equipment, bicycles. I'm a surfer myself. You could get probably 8-foot long board, maybe even 9-foot long board in there. It's really, really spacious. And then from an ADA standpoint, not only do we meet ADA standards, we actually exceed ADA standards. So a person in a wheelchair can come in, they can fully turn around, they can ride with two companions. We've done tons of user testing at our site. We've given about 800 rides at our site in Concord, California. It's a little over an hour away. We invite the board to come ride our system, experience it. Experience it is believing. I mean, you can ride in it. This isn't vaporware. They're awesome. And so the user experience for people in wheelchairs has been phenomenal. People have said, we really enjoy the system. We can get on and off the vehicles at our leisure without having to worry about holding up a whole bus or a train full of people. Based on this user testing, we actually redesigned our vehicle in 2024. So just 2 months ago, we released this. We've got former Apple and Google and Tesla engineers and designers that have built this. You'll see the tires there. There's a cover on them. That's just to prevent water wicking on the LiDAR. But what's under there is just rubber tires, same as you'd have on a car. There's no induction charging or anything. It's just rubber tires on pathway. The vehicles, they're quiet. They're battery electric, zero emissions vehicles. And then the inside of the vehicle, we designed this to really be an oasis. We want people to get in, sit back, relax, feel like they've already arrived at their destination. Once they're in the vehicle, you can use Wi-Fi. You can play your own music, adjust the lighting, the temperature. It's really, I mean, I've ridden it myself. It's an awesome experience. You can ride with your bike. There's a spot for a bike slot. Next slide. And then looking at the system, and Paul's going to go into more detail on this. We wanted these to be low impact systems that quietly go through the community. So the systems can be, the guideways can be at grade, they can be elevated, or they can be underground, or a combination of all three, which is what we're doing in San Jose. Next slide. And so what we've really done here is we've right-sized to demand. It's really simple. Smaller vehicles equal smaller infrastructure. So with a 5.5-foot guideway, we can go single direction. With a 15-foot guideway, we can go two directions. And putting cars on a guideway, that's nothing special. Anybody can do that. Where our intellectual property comes in and how we can, from a capacity standpoint, service anywhere from a few hundred people per hour all the way up to 10,000 passengers per hour per direction, is our IP is for how the vehicles get on and off the guideway and how they can travel it up to sub-second headways without ever having to stop or ever having to slow down. And that's what makes us different than literally every other solution that's out there in the world. And that's why, you know, we've applied for 4 RFPs so far. We've won at 2 others. So we've got, you know, great track record there. And one last point on this, I like to think of it like a highway. It's really simple, just like a highway. Vehicles are going in two different directions, and occasionally they pull off to pick people up and drop people off. And that's how our system works. Next slide. So just touching on some of our project wins. San Jose and our San Francisco Bay Area Transit Connector, these are going to start build in 2026. And they're going to be live revenue service in 2028, maybe early 2029. So for the San Jose Airport to Downtown Connector, this one's really an interesting project because this is one that they wanted to do for over 20 years, but it was going to cost $2 billion to put a train in. And so we came to them, we said, hey, look, we can do the 4.54 mile system. We can have 9 stations. We can do it for a fraction of the cost to put the train in. And we can do it right now. It's $550 million for the capital expenditure. This is one of our more expensive projects because it's mostly elevated. There's going to be some underground. But what's really cool about this project, it's a P3 delivery. So because our capital expenditures are so low and our operating expenditures are so low, we were able to attract private financing through Plenary Group. And so Plenary is funding the vast majority of the project. And so not only is it going to not cost $2 billion for the city to put it in, there's going to be a very fractional subsidy required on the city's part. the San Francisco Bay Area Transit Connector. This is one in East Contra Costa County. It's a 28-mile regional connector connecting four different cities to five heavy rail stations. One of the things that all of these projects have in common is they're feeders into other transit modes. So we want to drive ridership. We want to drive traffic to other modes of transportation. And then lastly, San Bernardino County Airport Connector. This is a 4.2-mile system. It's mostly underground, and it's, again, connecting to existing transit, to the Metrolink, and then also to the Brightline station that's going to Vegas. So I'm going to have Paul kind of bring it local, and then we're open to questions.
Very good. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was, we've really appreciated kind of like coming into the conversation today. And, you know, from the outside, we understood that there was a lot going on with this corridor. The entire conversation had some sense of the sensitivities. But it's really good to come down and kind of engage the conversation directly to appreciate them more fully. Next slide, please. One of the things that we want to leave you with today, first of all, is to plant a seed that we exist, that we're real, that we're a maturing technology that will be ready for the marketplace as reliable as other modes we have out there in the marketplace today. The other key thing is how we differ. We differ in our size, we differ in our operational requirements, and we differ significantly in the impact we have on the corridor and the environment that we operate in. So some of the key things that we've registered in the community that we hope to address within this is alleviating the congestion. Highway 1, we're all aware, is a real problem, but the surface streets as well become problems for people just getting around the community. In addition to that, the housing situation is a very real one. I live in San Francisco. He's in Southern California. We're all aware that housing is super sensitive and, you know, basically getting out of reach. Transportation plays a really key part of making that affordable and actually changing the way we plan and develop housing. So we really want to be able to help support transit-oriented development in this community. The regional climate kind of priorities of this community are part of its culture. We definitely want to be able to reinforce those and carry those forward in this new project. And lastly, these two elements are really about this as a place. We recognize the historical significance and the unique kind of lifestyle here in Santa Cruz and the California coast. We think we are a really good fit for that. And hopefully we can kind of convey some of that in what we're presenting today. Next, please. So the big picture, of course, is this connection all the way from Davenport up the coast, all the way over to Watsonville, but also the much more intense use that you all live with every day here in Santa Cruz to Aptos. And there are a number of different ways we could draw a line and make these connections happen. The centerpiece of this morning's conversation, of course, is the rail line, but the Highway 1 also presents a bit of a corridor that we could explore for application of this technology. This morning, we're not making any recommendations. We're just trying to kind of outline kind of like the requirements and the opportunities that we might be able to explore if we go forward together. So next slide. This is intended to kind of provide more focus where the real key ridership is, as we understand it. And the catchment diagrams going along parallel to the alignments themselves really try to convey the nature of the catchment that not only a pedestrian walking experience could do, every transit planner will look at that, but also what the light mobility of cycling and micromobility can afford. So to really get a sense of how much of this community could be served by a system like this. Another key point to kind of note with this, in contrast maybe to some of the planning of train options, is the number of stops we can do. As Dustin described, the vehicles are much smaller, our infrastructure is much smaller, so the cost of all those capital expenses is significantly less than the bigger modes that are on the table today. But we'll also have a lot more opportunity to create access points, as we call them. We don't even call them stations. Station conveys something significant in its scale, but the access points are really just points where we've got a number of different berths where the vehicles can be accessed by people boarding and exiting the system. Next. And this is a sense of just how big those vehicles are. The cross-section required for a single lane, as Dustin mentioned, is 5.5 feet. That raised portion in between the two lanes of opposing direction is an egress platform that is accessible from the vehicles directly. So there's no dropping 2 feet to get from a train out to the, should something break down. We really try to weave that accessibility through the entire system. And so that cross-section is a mere 14 or 16 feet if we go outside of the barriers necessary. As he mentioned, the vehicles require a protected space. So wherever our system goes, it's going to be protected by fencing to keep people out, to keep critters out, and just to basically preserve that operating space to keep it simple and high performance, delivering the kind of point-to-point nonstop experience with the capacities that we want to be able to deliver. But this is an illustration of how we could fit alongside the freight. This is not a configuration that would work necessarily in parallel or in tandem with the same space of a light rail. It would have much more regular, heavy, larger vehicles and more regular use. But this preserves that rail line for the intermittent use that the freight might need or require along the corridor. And of course, there would be coordination of timing and things like that. Our system is designed to be 24/7, but it can be whatever this community and operating model decides to be. The vehicles themselves, because they're small, are on demand as well. So this wouldn't be a scheduled 15, 20, 30 minute kind of regular schedule. It would be on demand. And that's one of the key features that makes this sort of the desirable option to get people out of their cars, giving them the freedom and flexibility to go where they want, when they want. And so those two diagrams of cross-section, they're really not proposals. They are just to give you a sense of all the space that we need to kind of fit into this very sensitive, highly coveted corridor, and hope that you can start to imagine yourself where and how these might go. The last is really how we are hoping to respond to some of those concerns identified. Number one, get people out of their cars, make more appealing the options that we have of bicycles, micromobility, walking, in addition to the transit systems that are already in place. We want to be able to enhance the current options on the table, so that we can perhaps provide even more housing. If we can alleviate the parking requirements for a given location, that's better places, more units. All the options, I think, are towards the goal of more housing for the community. Again, echoing the priorities and culture of this community, we want by running electric, on demand, small scale, we reduce the carbon footprint of the entire system, and we make this much more aligned to the kind of the culture that Santa Cruz is about. And then the final two, they're going to be quiet. They're going to be on demand. They could fit within for like the coastal communities that we've got, particularly the more sensitive ones further towards Aptos and to the east, as well as the very tightly constrained ones we've got here right in town. And then finally, the legacy of this is a part of Santa Cruz's history and culture. We want to be able to bring more people to it to experience it for the value it provides, rather than just hoping one day it'll become something worth doing. And that, I think that's the bottom line that we want to share with you today.